Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. government has made efforts to partner with Lesotho to accelerate women and youth empowerment. And the approach to technology and innovation is to invest on digital transformation aimed at financing and fostering a resilient digital ecosystem.
The Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho says the U.S. remains a strong partner to the Southern African Kingdom.
Reactions are divided and, kind of big deception from the opposition side, and there is also satisfaction from the winning side. So here we are talking about two feelings.
Chad's junta chief Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno is winner of this week's presidential election in the first round.
We need the transition to leave that time of ancient time, and the present time we create now is beginning with me, because I will be the first civilian to rule our country.
And a former Rwandan journalist plans to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame in the coming general election in July. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho, Ntomeng Majara, says the U.S. remains a strong partner to the Southern African Kingdom. Majara is the first female Deputy Prime Minister of Lesotho and also the first female Chief Justice. She says there is strong potential for partnerships between the administrations in Maseru and in Washington aimed at advancing women's economic empowerment through technology and innovation. Her comments came during the just-ended U.S.-Africa Business Summit in Dallas, Texas, organized by the Corporate Council on Africa. This, as Lesotho marks its eligibility for Compact 2 through the Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC. I reached Deputy Prime Minister Ntomeng Majara via a video link. Some of the topics discussed include the potential for partnerships between Lesotho and the U.S. that will benefit women. Here is part one of the conversation.
In general terms, the U.S. government has made efforts to partner with Lesotho to accelerate women and youth empowerment. And the approach to technology and innovation is to invest on digital transformation aimed at financing and fostering a resilient digital ecosystem. This is aimed at addressing gender inequalities, because we still have those in Lesotho. They still exist a lot, and they affect women's opportunities to access trade, to access information, to access legislation that's out there, generally opportunities that are usually more available to their male counterparts. So the U.S. is trying to help Lesotho address those inequalities and other social and digital divides. We also aim to foster easier access to information, as I said, because it is not very easy for women, especially those from the rural communities, to access information, because we don't have sufficient internet in some of the hard-flung areas, hard-to-reach areas. And we most of the women in the rural communities don't even have the modern technological devices as yet. So the intention is for us, together with the government of the U.S., to improve access by empowering them and by providing them with the much-needed internet, access to the internet, access to devices, so that it will be easier for them.
So, Madam Deputy Prime Minister, you initially talked about the MCC Compact 2. How will this be of good benefit to Lesotho, having especially focused on issues like improving health sectors during the first compact and still focusing on women and youth?
Yes, indeed. The first compact was focusing on health, infrastructure in the health sector, but it is also extending that in the second compact. So women are still going to benefit. Women and the youth are still going to benefit, because they are going to get improved access to health services, access to health data. Even actually, we are introducing and rolling out an app within the health ministry, which will help them consult with their doctors from the comfort of their homes. So they will have increased access to information, increased access to health services, economic and social inclusion through trade and investment projects, such as the ones in the horticulture industry, because the second compact is more focused on horticulture, climate smart agriculture, so that the big commercial farmers can collaborate with small landholder farmers in the communities.
Looking at Lesotho's unique geographical location within Southern Africa, and particularly South Africa, how do you see the regional cooperation in enhancing economic empowerment of women in Lesotho and the broader Southern Africa region?
For us, actually, there are no better options than using regional cooperation as a vehicle to access international trade and markets, because we are landlocked in one big giant economy. So it's not easy for us to trade regionally and internationally. And membership to these regional bodies will actually help us a lot, ease trade barriers, give us more access to the markets, which will also benefit our women entrepreneurs and youth. And also, Lesotho has acceded to the African Continental Free Trade Area protocol on women and youth in trade. So the protocol seeks to promote sustainable and inclusive economic empowerment and to promote equal opportunity for women and youth in trade. So membership to regional bodies and regional cooperation is going to be very beneficial to us, because not only are we landlocked, but we are landlocked inside one country. So it opens up access to other countries and to other markets.
When I said I was going to be speaking with you, people have been asking me to ask you, what structures does Lesotho even have in place regarding women and youth into national policies to enhance women's economic empowerment and cross-border trade? Do you think their questions are justified?
Of course, they are justified. It's well and good to talk about things theoretically, but if you don't have structures in place to implement those arrangements and agreements, they're as good as not there. So we have the Ministry of Gender, Youth and Social Development that oversees, amongst others, the National Youth Policy and National Gender Policy. But actually, even recently, the Right Honorable the Prime Minister launched a youth program, Sibabazo, where youth innovators and entrepreneurs are able to come and compete with their creative projects. And that competition actually helps them improve in their products. And then they win big amounts of money for startup capital. So that has really helped. But also, aside from the ministry, there's a national youth policy which provides coherent efforts aimed at youth development and economic freedom.
Ntomeng Majara is Lesotho's Deputy Prime Minister. She spoke with me from Dallas, Texas. Join us on Sunday for the conclusion of the conversation. In South Africa, the regional coordinator for the opposition Nkonto Wesizwe, or MK Party, is questioning the timing of the petition to the Electoral Commission by an expelled member of the party. Lungisani Momela says the Electoral Commission should not have accepted the petition since MK founder Jubulani Khumalo was recently expelled. His remarks come after the Electoral Commission rejected Khumalo's petition seeking to remove former President Jacob Zuma as the face of the newly formed MK party from a candidate list of members of parliament. Responding to the petition, the electoral body says it does not interfere in the internal affairs of political parties. MK party regional coordinator Lungisani Mamela tells me that the party has stepped up its campaign to win 2/3 majority in parliament to form the next government.
As the youth league of Umkhonto Sizwe, we are of the view that all members of the MK party must be disciplined, because we've all made aware that President Zuma is the president of the MK party and is the leader of the MK party. Even Jabulani Khumalo is in full understanding of that, because all organizational processes were done to ensure that Zuma is the party lead. Even with IEC, Zuma is registered as the party lead. So Khumalo is well aware of that. Jabulani Khumalo is well aware that he was served an expulsion from the organization. He's no longer a member of the organization, which meant that Jabulani Khumalo is no longer associated with the organization. So now, being Jabulani Khumalo, he then decided to go to IEC and requested Jacob Zuma to be removed from the parliament list. So now, from that tells you that Jabulani Khumalo doesn't respect the process of the organization and doesn't respect the organization itself, because now if the organization is expelled, you're supposed to be disciplined and ensure that you don't associate yourself with the organization unless a decision is taken otherwise. So Jacob Zuma remains the party leader and remains on the party list. So people like Jabulani Khumalo are all out in ensuring that the MK party does not succeed in its mission to attain two-thirds majority in the upcoming election. So members of the MK party are focused on winning elections. Members of the MK party are disciplined, and they respect the decision that was taken by the MK party to expel Commander Khumalo and other members who were expelled. So in this organization,
but Lungisani, he argues in his letter to the Electoral Commission that, Mr. Zuma fraudulently, occupies the position as a leader of the new party.
No. The MK party has a structure called the National Leadership Corps, which takes decisions. So the letter to expel President Khumalo was communicated by the National Leadership Corps collectively, not by President Zuma. Second to it, the National Leadership Corps has always been led by President Zuma. So there was no fraudulent process. All processes that were done were taken by the National Leadership Corps collectively. Hence, all the decisions were communicated by the Office of the Secretary General. And all media releases were communicated by Comrade Khumalo. So everything and every decision that was taken was communicated via organizational structures. So there was no fraudulent. And worst of it all, Mr. Khumalo was part of that collective as the national commander of Umkhonto Sizwe Party. So in those meetings, we took decision to expel him. In those meetings, we took decision that President Zuma must go to parliament. Jabulani Khumalo was on those meetings of National Leadership Corps, which took those decisions. So I don't understand what fraudulent things that happened, because even the National Leadership of the MK Youth League was part and parcel of those meetings. So hence, even ourselves, we remain disciplined and we support the decision that was taken by Umkhonto Sizwe Party National Leadership Corps to expel those members.
The Electoral Commission has said that it does not interfere in the internal political dynamics of a political party. But on Friday, you understand the Electoral Commission has appealed Zuma's candidacy ban for a parliamentary seat. Aren't all these court cases hindering efforts by your party in the coming election?
No. We've always said that there is this thing about IEC that is trying to ensure that it defocus us from our campaign. Hence, we do not really believe that they are not into our internal matters, because now, for the longest time, ever since MK started its campaign for election, we've been dragged to court. So now that tells you that IEC has a position that it does not want President Zuma to be on that list. So that alone is political. So now we have said it before that President Zuma will be on the ballot and President Zuma will be on the parliament list. So either way, the IEC can go to the highest court on earth. Will win the case. So now we believe that it is political for them to ensure that they fight Jacob Zuma to be not on the ballot, to be not on the parliament list. But as members of Umkhonto Sizwe, we remain focused on ensuring that our campaign runs smooth. Those court cases, by the way, they are assisting us We go to court, we campaign, people will see that Nkonto Sizwe is visible. So now, so long as they take us to court, we will pass each other there to court and organize rallies outside court. So, but we also view that the stance of IEC to remove Jacob Zuma is politically informed.
Lungisani Mamela is regional coordinator for the opposition Nkonto Sizwe MK Party. He spoke with me from Durban, South Africa. Still in South Africa, political analysts say the governing African National Congress, or ANC, appears inconsistent and indecisive over plans to take disciplinary action against former President Jacob Zuma. Their comments come after local media reports say a planned disciplinary hearing for the former president this week was postponed until after the May 29 general election. No reasons were given for the decision. Zuma, who says he will remain a member of the ANC, is the leader of the newly formed Nkonto Wesizwe Party, or MK. Some members of the ANC want the former president to be expelled after forming a party that would challenge the ANC in the coming polls. For the latest political development, I reach Franz Kronje. He is a political analyst and the chairman of the Social Research Foundation.
I can tell you that any attempt that the ANC has made over the past several years to discipline Mr. Zuma in any way, or indeed any attempt that the ANC and government has made to try and hold Mr. Zuma account for alleged corruption during his time in office, has tended to backfire in the sense that it has created the impression in important political constituencies that Mr. Zuma is being persecuted by the ANC. Now, in research that's been done over the last 2 to 3 years, opinion poll research, Mr. Zuma has stood out as a particularly favorably viewed, popular figure in some core ANC constituencies. And I can tell you that in the tracking polls are run on South Africa, Mr. Zuma's party is standing at 13% of the vote, which is incredibly strong. It makes him the third largest political party in the country.
But Franz, the suggestion by some political analysts in South Africa appears to criticize the ANC for being indecisive, for, you know, announcing or sending a letter to the former president, according to local media reports, that there will be a disciplinary hearing, then all of a sudden to postpone it, saying it will not be held until after the election. What's going on here?
As an observer on the outside, I think that one of the interpretations that you might draw is that there is a fear within the ANC that any attempts to pursue Mr. Zuma, or indeed in the government to pursue him on charges of corruption, which he's faced, will raise his profile in the country and raise his popularity in former ANC political constituencies that believe he's being unfairly persecuted, and that to whatever extent that has occurred to date, Mr. Zuma is now presiding over the third largest political party in the country, one that was launched only a few weeks ago, and one which is in and of itself alone going to be responsible perhaps for pushing the ANC's national majority in South Africa to below 50%. For the first time since the dawn of democracy in 1994. So you might want to, I mean, if you think what's going on here, a good place to start is the idea that the ANC is afraid of Mr. Zuma and the political damage he might yet cause them.
Do you think the ANC being afraid, like you described, backs the assertion or criticism from opponents who say the ANC is indecisive and inconsistent based on this on-again, off-again decision to discipline the former president?
Yeah, I suppose you could say there's indecision, but what it reflects is divisions within the leadership and a range of deeper and much more complex issues. Pursuing Mr. Zuma, for example, as the state has tried to do on grounds of corruption, is seen as risky in parts of the ANC, given that many serving senior leaders of that party are also vulnerable to being prosecuted for corruption. And I have little doubt that leaders of Mr. Zuma's era know exactly where the bodies are buried, to put it that way, in terms of corruption that occurred during his time in office.
The MK party, led by former President Zuma, has lashed out at the Independent Electoral Commission, hinting it is colluding with the ANC to get rid of a political competitor. Do you think this criticism is justified?
Well, again, I don't know what's going on inside the ranks of the Electoral Commission. But I will say to you that the commission, in appealing some court judgments that have favoured Mr. Zuma, has, in my mind, certainly raised the question over whether it is acting in a partial or impartial manner. And there is a history in South Africa of the last 15 years of what should nominally be independent institutions responsible for democracy being politically compromised. So I would not dismiss Mr. Zuma's allegations out of hand. And I think wherever such allegations are made in a democratic society such as South Africa, that deserve to be thoroughly investigated, regardless of whether you approve or not of the source of the allegation of the impropriety.
Franz Kronje is a political analyst and the chairman of the Social Research Foundation. He spoke with me from the South African capital, Pretoria. In Mozambique, a political analyst says the ruling party's newly appointed presidential candidate may boost Frelimo's electoral prospects in the coming October polls. Décio Alfa Zema says the failure of the opposition parties to resolve their internal challenges could also give the ruling party a lift in the elections. His reaction comes after Frelimo chose as the presidential candidate Daniel Chapo, a regional governor, former radio presenter and political science lecturer. For more reaction and analysis, I reach Décio Alfa Zema.
These elections represent a transition of the generation in Frelimo parties. As you know, Frelimo parties is a very old party. The other candidates was involved in the conflict that bring independence for the country. So then, which Philippe Jacinto News, they move for one candidate that are from the public administration, the technocrat, was not involved in the independence fight. So now Frelimo move and conclude this process of the transition of the generation and bring one young, 47 years old, and have a very good experience in terms of the governance process. He's a member of the government at provincial level. Also, he has experience in terms of the district, has administrators. So this move was very important to refresh the image of Frelimo parties.
How are the people of Mozambique so far reacting to this, especially for those who are supporters of Frelimo?
The first reaction is very positive, even for the young boys. In Mozambique, we have the most of the population are young, so the first reaction was very positive. During the internal election process, a member of the Central Committee of Frelimo Party, they bring some duped in terms of the possibility to be elected the general secretary of Frelimo Party. So the image of general secretary of Frelimo Party is not good internally and externally of the Frelimo parties. So I think that because of this situation, they move and they bring agreement to elect this young man, yes.
But he's virtually unknown. People say he is not known nationwide. So do you think Frelimo has a chance to really sell him and make him popular before the election? Do you think Frelimo has it?
Yes, I think so, because he's not new. He was a journalist and he is a little popular He was a journalist. His work and present some programs in the television, in the radio. So now I think that Frelimo have a time to become him popular. So and because he is young, he has more facility to disseminate his image. But in Mozambique, normally the voters, he vote according which the party is, not necessarily in terms of who is in front. Also, in the opposition party, they are very fragile now. From now, Frelimo is in decreasing process, and the MDM is in decreasing process, and Renamo party, they have this many conflict, internal conflicts, and so he is, the Renamo party also is not in very good moment. So Frelimo candidates have a very big chance to win this election.
Desio Alfazema is a political analyst. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Chad's junta chief, Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno, has been declared winner of this week's presidential election in the first round, according to provisional official results released on Thursday. His victory extends his family's decades-long grip on power. Monday's vote was aimed at ending 3 years of military rule in a country crucial to the fight against jihadism across Africa's Sahel Desert region. The Angie Electoral Commission said Deby won 61.03% of vote, beating his prime minister Suse Masra, who only garnered 18.53%, and results due to be confirmed by the Constitutional Council. Soldiers fired shots in the air in the capital N'Djamena out of joy and to deter protesters, AFP journalists reported, after Masra had earlier claimed victory and warned Deby's team will rig the results. For more reaction, I reach Lagarde Moltong. He is a project developer and political commentator in Chad.
Yeah, Peter, reactions are divided, and kind of big deception from the opposition side, and there is also satisfaction from the winning side. So here we are talking about two feelings.
What are supporters of the opposition saying? Because I hear the supporters of President Itno are celebrating.
Yes. As you know, last time I was talking about if the National Election Commission has the means to declare as soon as possible the results. So this is what's happened finally. At the surprise of all, yesterday by the middle of the day, diplomatical corps were invited in the evening so that they will be declaring partial results or provisional results, and that's what happened. This happened around 8 p.m. local time, and before that, 1 hour earlier, the opposition side, the Transformateurs President Suse Masra, declared himself as winner already 1 hour ahead before even the commission declared. So this is the scenarios that happened yesterday, and in all the night, the fellows were celebrating all the night until now. So this is kind of what's going on.
For those who say they rejected the outcome of the election, especially the opposition, what are they saying about the election?
Generally, the population are rejecting. They think the results are not correct. They think the results have been settled, or because seeing what happened with the campaigns, they don't think Masra would get that small result, which is 18%, and Deby Mahamat with 61.
What are the expectations of the people of Chad after this election? What are they telling you they expect from the new president?
People from Chad, they have the same difficulties, they are having the same challenges, and expectations are the same. One, better education, security, food security, and also general development. This is an expectation, and more of freedom. These are the expectations for all Chadians, even who doesn't matter who will be the president, but these are the expectations from Chadians.
With the over 60% vote that the transitional president got, it means that they really expect him to solve all the problems that you have just enumerated.
Yeah, I mean, as they said, those are provisional results. The vote from the Chadian people, that means, they put their trust in him to overcome their problems. But though they are still provisional results, so I think there will be maybe recounting as the rule says. So if there will be recounting, these digits could be revealed and then anyways. But for me, it seems like that's the last scenario.
What is the current situation in N'Djamena, the capital, where you are now? What is the situation? How is the mood?
Yeah, obviously today, I think most of the offices are closed because people couldn't know what will happen. And because yesterday evening by 5, there was a huge deployment of military and police and security forces around the main roundabouts and main sectors and securing all the city. And till now, there are still those security forces staying and watching around. So people are kind of, some people feel a little bit afraid. And some people are still, going through the activities. The markets are open and, buses are running. So this is somehow the situation in Germany. But it's pretty quiet now, except of yesterday night. There were a lot of celebrations with shootings of weapons. So for now, everything has been quiet so far till now.
Lagarde Moltong is a project developer and political commentator in Chad. He spoke with me from the capital in N'Djamena. In Rwanda, a former journalist says he plans to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame in the general election in July. Philippe Mpayimana, an independent candidate who competed in the last polls, also says he plans to soon release a document that outlines his key programs, which he says will transform the lives of Rwandans. His critics, however, dismiss his candidacy, saying he is not likely to pose any significant electoral challenge to the longtime president. The question his motivation and what they say appears to be a lack of financial resources to back his nationwide campaign. Philippe Mpayimana tells me that he is the only candidate who can bring the change that the country needs.
They need changes, and I am a candidate to bring changes, especially to get them involved in democracy. I am a son of the country, and that is just enough, because we have to promote the participation of the population in the ruling of the country.
What makes you uniquely qualified to bring the change that you think the people of Rwanda want? What makes you uniquely qualified to bring about this change?
Just to be independent, there are anti-Pakists which were not very successful, and an independent candidate is needed today to harmonize, to make a coherence between the time of the party, the multi-party politics, which has failed. It failed because till 1994, multi-partism was ethnic. It is not good. And after we have had the war, and the revolution was brought by the RPF through the war. You see, now we are going through that history, hoping that multipartism can calm that situation. An independent candidate is needed.
Some Rwandans tell me that President Kagame has been winning because people trust him. Why should they vote for you when majority of the people say they trust him and he has led the country well?
I have answered that question because we need the transition. We need the transition to leave that time of ancient time, and the present time we create now is beginning with me, you see. Because when you have won the war and you lead the country, people, yes, of course, he has many qualities of leadership, but we can see another way of leading through a person like a civilian. I will be the first civilian to rule our country. You see, that's very new, and I want to bring that political climate.
The last time in 2017 when you competed as an independent candidate, you did not win a lot of votes. What makes you think that this time around is going to be different?
I'm not deciding that, but I will use much more effort to convince, and I have realized many things that they can see. Such as to keep polite, you see, it's necessary that it will be different. It will be different, and the way to win is possible.
Well, people are saying that it looks like you are just one of the people who is trying to add to the numbers, and that you don't even have the financial resources to go around the country to campaign. And they are calling you a joke.
No, they are joking themselves. We are serious. We are not joking, but let them tell what they want. We are working, and they are facts, and they are effort. And when they say about financial, that is not correct also, because I am independent and financially independent. I am not begging. They can help. If they don't want to help, I don't authorize such criticism.
What is your vision for the people of Rwanda?
You know, my project will be published soon. My first project is to make my country of Rwanda the heart of Africa, and to bring peace in Africa by my country leading that thing. You know, we have a step realized many things about our unity as Rwandan. That unity, I want to add something that we can unite Africans around Rwanda.
Philippe Mpayimana is an independent presidential candidate. He spoke with me from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. In Uganda, the chairman of the National Association of Broadcasters, or NAB, says an agreement was reached following a meeting to resolve tensions between members of the organization and officials of the Uganda Communications Commission. This after the organization that represents the media refused to comply with a directive from the authorities to broadcast a campaign message to help promote the National Population and Housing Census. The directive instructed broadcasters to air the campaign message between May 8th to 20, following guidelines from the Ministry of ICT and National Guidance for Free Government Airtime. But Innocent Nahabwe, the NAB chairman, says in spite of the importance of the national program, broadcasters must be paid for their service since, he contends, the government has a budget for it. He tells me that the meeting resolved that only messages from the president will be broadcast without any payment.
Our understanding was such a message should have been paid for, because the Uganda Bureau of Statistics, which is charged with the duty of carrying out the census, was actually given a budget of over 144 billion. To run this census. But instead of availing money to media houses to be able to run the campaign, they opted to, you know, go to UCC and have it pushed down to us as the directive, using a clause in the Communications Act which says media houses shall provide free airtime, government to be able to communicate the national functions and national events and emergencies. We do not think this is an emergency. It has taken them 10 years. They knew this was coming. It is something that has been on. They have had contact, and they also have money to run the campaign. So we think they have not been able to use their money appropriately. And if they haven't used the money appropriately, they shouldn't force us to run their campaign for free.
The question is, members of your organization are in the business of informing or educating the public apart from other obligations. What prevents you from being patriotic to educate your listeners or audience about what is happening nationally? This is what some Ugandans are asking.
This country has very little, very few private sector players. So government remains the biggest advertiser. Government remains the biggest business provider. If government does not do business with you, you go bust. Now, for an occasion, an event like this, government actually had money and budget to be able to pay for these messages. So the money has instead been used in other activities without considering the media as a business, because the media houses are business first and foremost. So if there is money to do the activity, taxpayer money, and we are taxpayers, and there's money to do the activity, and you say yes, for all other activities, for printing, for hotels, for fuel, you will pay. But then for media, be patriotic and run it for free. It is very difficult. And our biggest problem is that if we do this, it will set a precedent where all other government organizations and agencies will go to UCC and ask them to give us directives and say, yes, we want to register people in the country for national IDs. It's a national event. It's a very important event. So run it for free. The Electoral Commission, we have elections in a year. They will be able to go to UCC and say, we want to run to do voter education. Run it for free. Yet it has gotten billions and billions to be able to educate and communicate the government's message.
With what you have said, some are suggesting that perhaps you should meet officials at the Uganda Communications Commission to address your concern instead of flat out rejecting their directive.
The response was in response because they had also not contacted us. They just sent us a letter with a directive. So we responded. But now this afternoon we have had a meeting with the executive director of the UCC, the Honorable Nyodi Kembo, and we have agreed to run only the presidential message on the census, but for all other communication, you both will have to pay for it. Because after all, they have the budget, and instead they are spending the budget on these loudspeakers in townships, which are actually banned by UCC. Because there are some loudspeakers that exist in townships, which make a lot of noise for the public. And it's what the Ghana Bureau of Statistics has been spending on, which we think is the wrong way to publicize any activity. So we have agreed with UCC to run the president's message, starting immediately. But for all other communication, which should be paid for, we have to be paid for.
So that issue has been resolved moving forward now?
We have resolved, yes, and we are moving forward. But the way we have resolved is we shall separate the messages of the president and the other messages, and the other, which are public service announcements, and other messages, which we shall then ask the Grand Bureau of Statistics to pay for if they want us to run them.
Innocent Nahabwe is the chairman of the National Association of Broadcasters, or NAB. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
You got my patient has come, so that it will tell you a story. You're picking up and that is small. I call them the own respect. Me and you no go able to pay them for the
one way and one way.
So do you mind the words?
And know what you for say.
Do you
undermine the action. No what you for do. Excuse me, madam. Waiting now you need.
Namin den Sunita.
Okay, I want for talk with you.
No problem.
Have you seen your devil up and down? Waiting now your mission. You go school.
Oh yes, but really another fun.
Waiting making now continue. They call you young too.
My long story.
One for no, because myself can't get picky.
Now long story, uncle, it's a story, oh.
I like it long like monkey bridge. Tell me you never know.
Me mama died the same day we born me. Me love you, papa. Now ain't no more bring the take care. Give me all kind college because I've been there trying to school. You know we get much, but I know when to sleep hungry. Struggle for me, cause he say I'll undo. Man can predict well.
The gonna get the final say.
Now waiting, making up, continue. Just let me so.
It's so sorry, uncle. I don't want for member.
Tell me soon it's time, cause I really want for no.
Lost me daddy, for the rebel war. Rebel they attack the village, I in their home. They want for kill me, go me daddy tower, he say no. Because he tower, not before me, they be the torturer. Waiting I be taking so till the broken teeth.
When them no say me daddy let me so much, now that's make the heart run.
Dengue and the gun now. They say, well, you can you begin. Where daddy don't watch me. What a run, I'm guy. I know be a boss cry. For me loving papa. The chuka night aid, give a command. Say, can you begin? We are seeing blood is splash. So God I nearly faint.
I tell daddy, say, kill me. If not, I no more go save your life.
Daddy look me in the eye, shaking head and boss cry. Daddy hold the gun in hand, but to God in no fire. Daddy say Sunita, I no get mine for kill you. Make a die with this pain, once no more your life go more. They kill me for me, they say well you baby papa. Oh what a wicked people.
I no ever seen a life.
Now this not my problem. Where they can be up and down.
I know. Make your soul rest in peace.
My God said it been for so little. Do you have good time?
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind of game.
What no you may say. Why make it so?
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind of game.
This is Chavine's music.
And if it been on me out, it goes off your story. Have faith in it, then believe in the mighty God. But wait till you go one for to now, when you live in tomorrow.
I want for further me education, college could be the best for me. I want for make sure for fulfill me daddy in dream.
Daddy not there today, oh. Daddy spirit there with me.
I don't get much on it, but I'm gonna try for a few. And so don't choose for clowning. I'm gonna try my level best. Let progress on it, and believe in the mighty God.
Papa, oh, make your soul rest in peace.
I don't say it painful, so let up to your holy hands.
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind.
I make it so.
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind of game. Papa, oh, make your soul rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer the great Tiang Wang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a hungry person should not be told to guard the porridge. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
That time on the chase and then no money. Day.